How's that? Great. All right. That's the signal. So wonderful to be here with you all. Thank you to this community and to Tara and to Washington, D.C. to having me here. I'm happy to share tonight with you in some interesting things, some approaches to mindfulness that I learned when I was traveling in the East and have found helpful for myself. So in some ways, that's really, there are as many styles of meditation as there are people, you know? So everyone has a little variation, a little way to find out what works for them. But the basics of what we're talking about is a style called mindfulness. And I'm going to talk about deliberate mindfulness, or intentional mindfulness, and then I'm going to talk about effortless mindfulness, which leads to heart mindfulness. So I thought I would start with a little story that would kind of illustrate this from my book that I just wrote. So the chapter's called Being Home While Returning Home. Once there was a fish who had heard tales of the source of life, which would bring whomever found it their heart's desire. The fish swam to every corner of the ocean, asking, "Where is the source of life? How can I find it?" She kept getting pointed toward different tasks and to more remote parts of the sea, farther, deeper, higher. After many years of seeking, the fish arrived back at the place where she had first started. Entering her home waters, she encountered an older fish who asked, "What's going on with you, my friend? Why do you seem so worried and dejected?" "I've spent years looking for the source of life," the fish explained. "I can't even begin to tell you how many things I've tried or the number of places I've searched, the people I've tried to meet, all in vain. I don't suppose you know where I could find it." The old fish smiled and said, "I've heard many names for this source of life in my day, but the simplest is water." So just like the fish, we've been searching for an amazing source of life. And although this essential source is indescribable in words, it's been given many names: truth, God, peace, source, love, true nature, enlightenment, unity, or spirit. But the simplest name for us is awareness. So this is what we're going to explore tonight, is what is this awareness? And in deliberate mindfulness, we often start with two practices. The first is kind of a one-pointed practice, yeah? It's called shamatha. And we take our attention, which is a type of awareness, and we try to focus it on our breath, either at the nostrils or our rising and falling of our chest or our belly rising and falling. And the intention of this is to use attention to calm the chattering mind. So the problem or the current situation is that we're lost in thought. We're caught up in our thinking. We're dominated by moving thoughts and trying to create or locating ourselves in a sense of self that's in our thoughts. And by calming through one-pointed attention, we calm the mind. It settles down. And then the second type of deliberate mindfulness is observing thoughts as they move. Yeah? So first we calm, and then it's almost like we step back or we just wait, and we notice that the thoughts that we were identified with all of a sudden become contents of consciousness. They're coming and going. Yeah? They're changing. They're not steady. And we can get on the train of thought at any point. So if a thought arises, "I'm not sure I'm understanding what this guy is saying right now," we can get on that thought And we can keep, yeah, that's true. Well, maybe I do. Let me refer to something I read or heard before. And now we're off in thought. Whereas if we have that thought, we develop a mindful witness, an observing meditator, mindful meditator that can observe, I'm not sure I'm getting this. And there goes that thought. And meanwhile, here you are. Yeah? So how many people have experienced that type of mindful meditation? Yeah? And how about the first type, which is kind of focusing on, yeah, one point, one breath. Yeah? And those often are stages, and people go and at your own pace, and you find a way to calm and soothe both your body and mind. And then the movement of effortless mindfulness is rather than focusing and calming, rather than observing contents of consciousness, what we do is we actually find a way to have awareness become aware of itself as the subject and the object. So when awareness rests as itself, looks to itself, or lets go of the looker, there's a kind of openness and awareness that's not the same as the mindful meditator or witness. Each of those could be called awareness. I'm aware of my breath. I'm aware of my thoughts. Now, as awareness either relaxes back, turns back, opens and returns, discovers, drops, lets go, there's a way that first it almost has to be on the map of our interest, that that's a possibility, that there's a possibility that awareness can be aware of itself without thought content. So that's kind of what we're going to explore tonight. And everything I'm presenting is not to be believed. In some ways, you know, I kind of proceed in the modern way by saying that what I'm presenting is a view or a hypothesis, right? So I set out the hypothesis. So this is the hypothesis, that awareness can be aware of itself. When it is, that a certain pattern of self-consciousness relaxes and there's an embodied awareness that's free of a lot of striving, fear, worry, and shame. That agitation of anxiety relaxes, a sense of repression and depression opens, and that's the reports I've gotten from those who have done the experiments, but you'll have to see for yourself, and you'll see as we do these things tonight, these little pointers, these little mindful experiments, you'll report to your fellow meditators about what's true for you. So I thought what we would do is we would start with a 10-minute deliberate mindfulness guided meditation. And then, so we'll start by being aware of our breath, then we'll be aware of the contents of sensation, thought, feeling, and movement of consciousness just to see how that goes. And then we'll start to become aware of awareness even toward the end. We'll just be aware of the awareness between the thoughts, aware of the awareness that's here while everything else is happening. And we'll just start to kind of directly experience a little bit for yourself wherever you are, okay? So often in the first two deliberate mindfulness practices, the Theravada system usually closes their eyes. The Zen people close their eyes halfway, and the Tibetans often keep their eyes open. So whichever you like, probably if you're used to keeping your eyes closed, you can do that. And we'll go through a little guided meditation. So just adjust yourself in your seat so you can kind of let your body know you're beginning a certain new way of looking within. And maybe take a little deeper breath. And as you let go, just let go of any holding in your body, any concerns of the day, anything you were thinking about when you came in, any planning that was in your mind, just as much as you can. Just let go for a moment. It may come back, and that's fine too. So just settling in and feeling the support of the chair, feeling your feet on the ground, feeling your body, and feeling your breath as it moves first through your whole body, as your body expands. Feel the oxygen coming in and going out. And then just begin to intentionally choose a place of contact, a place of focus within your body where the breath is moving. So you can choose the place at your nostrils where the breath is entering and leaving, place at your chest where your lungs are rising and falling, place at your belly where your belly is gently expanding with the in-breath and relaxing with the out-breath, and choose a small area or a medium area. And just begin to be interested there. So bringing your interest and attention to this one place where movement's happening. So in the foreground is this place of contact. In the midground is a lot of movement. And in the observing background is mindful awareness, aware of one place of interest without being too tight or too loose. Just if your mind wanders to something else you're thinking about or daydream, just notice that and then return without judgment to the observing of this one area where the breath is touching, contacting your body. Just returning to that breath as the point of contact in the foreground. And then just starting to rest as that awareness that's also noticing other movement in your body. Maybe at first noticing sensation around the breath, sensation coming and going, and the space in which it moves. And then just begin to notice that not only are physical sensations coming and going, but thinking almost as mental sensation, automatic thoughts are arising in the field of your awareness. So no big deal, nothing to analyze or understand, just observing, coming and going, changing. You may notice that you're at one moment identified with a thought, at another moment thinking is coming and going. Just like sounds are coming and going, sensations are coming and going, thoughts are coming and going. And just now notice your entire mind, your thinking. And just notice just how it is without trying to change it. Notice whether your mind is still or agitated, tired, or anxious, moving, judging. Just notice exactly how the quality of your mood, your thoughts, your mind. And just let them be just as they are. And then notice, see if you can be aware that while the thoughts have this quality, are you also aware of an awareness that's here at the same time, that's not worried, that's not in pain, that's not anxious or moving? Be aware of awareness in which thoughts are coming and going. Just subtly, like tuning in to see whether it's so. Not changing or stopping thoughts, just noticing the field of awareness. That's clear and non-reactive. And notice your body as well, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, tired, little pain here or there, and just accept it just as it is. Just allow it to be without trying to change it or move or feel it should be another way. Just feel your body from within, your mind from within, and notice whether there's an awareness as well that's with your mind, with your body, that's not tired, that's pain-free, worry-free, that's not separate even, that's with, inherent within, aware from, just a subtler dimension, while everything's allowed to move, just notice the space between the movement around and within that's aware. Just feeling that awareness and the aliveness of your full experience, both simultaneously. Awareness, aliveness, particularness of who you are, but also the spacious awareness to which everything appears. So not focusing so much on what's arising, but interested in the awareness to which thoughts, feelings, sensations feel, are felt, known. So just taking a little deeper breath and feeling your feet on the ground, the support of the chair. Just starting to transition to, in some way, stay just the way you are. To stay as this awareness, even as you begin to open your eyes. Just remaining at home in your body, in this awareness, which includes the movement of thought, feeling, emotion, sensation. See what it's like to be here aware and alert and oriented by awareness rather than going to thought to orient about what's here, who's here. Let thought be available as needed, but not the primary level of mind. Let this awareness mind, this embodied awareness, alert, awake quality be a sense of a ground. Yeah. So, how's that? How many people? And one thing about meditation is you also learn about how your mind normally is that you may not even be aware. So how many people felt sleepy? Yeah? And how many people felt caught up in thought at any point? And how many people felt that their mind wandered and they didn't even realize it had wandered until they were in the wandering daydream, and then they went like, how did I get here? And then came back. So that's the way the what's called the everyday mind, the ordinary mind, the ego mind, operates. When we're in that fast-moving everyday mind, orienting, it's always changing, and we're changing with it. So one of the reasons it's hard to focus for more than a few seconds isn't because of our will or our intention or our skill. It's because We're looking from the moving mind. And so when we say, okay, bring your attention to your left hand, you bring your attention to your left hand, and by the time you go back and check, your mind has already moved. So you can't maintain focus, not because focus, the ability to focus, isn't a skill you can learn. It's ultimately because you're operating from the moving mind, the chattering mind, the monkey mind. Yeah, you've heard of the monkey mind. So this monkey mind, in one system in Hinduism, they talk about four natural states. So the first one is this everyday mind, this ego functioning that we live from and orienting from. The second natural state is sleep. The third is dream or daydream, right? So we know those first very well, right? And the fourth natural state is called awake awareness. The fourth natural state is the one we don't even have on our map. And so that's the introduction. That's the thing that ultimately is giving us the effects of meditation, is some level of contact with this, what's called the source of mind, the nature of mind, the awareness-based operating system rather than the thought-based operating system. So we're really kind of upgrading our way of operating in the world, moving from trying to maintain ourselves in a way that we actually, what obscures and what creates this sense of self that is often talked about when Buddha talks about letting go of the self or anatta, no self. It's not your personality. It's not your body. It's not the one that creates suffering is actually a pattern of thinking that loops around itself and self-references, creating an observer that says, oh, I shouldn't have done that. What am I saying? What am I going to be doing? And then it co-opts the boundary program of the body, and it creates a little me inside our head looking out of our eyes as if there's a little entity in there. But it's difficult for us to experience it because you're listening to me through that right now. Most people are trying to understand how to do it, and so meditation is often, okay, stop doing that, completely keep your body still, go away to a quiet place, calm yourself down, and then you shift your consciousness by giving it a task that lets it settle. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to see what our natural condition is when we relax that pattern of self-referencing and or get a taste of what awareness itself is like, what this Buddha nature feels like. Yeah? And there's a couple little pointers that some will work for some people and others will work for others, but you know, we'll hear what the reports are from this. So what happens is when this little patterning of self-conscious thinking starts referencing itself, and then it thinks it's got to go get food or satisfaction, and it thinks it has to protect itself from being threatened. But actually, it's just a pattern of thought that when it relaxes, we actually feel like in the flow state. We feel good. In fact, much of the enjoyable activities we do to let this seeking, problem-solving secondary self relax. So we go on a climb with friends up a hill, and we have a goal, and we're in nature, and we're with people we like, and we're striving, and we're going toward a goal. And so both have a normal goal of climbing, but then the problem solver is also on board saying, I'm going to get there, it's going to be good, it's going to solve all my problems, then I'll be okay, I'll find satisfaction. And then we get there and we stop seeking at the top of the hill. We relax, we look at the space, and this secondary self relaxes and we feel this boundless, interconnected dimension of freedom and connection to people we're with, right? And there's some support of the environment, but 2 days later, we're back at work. We've lost that sense. We're back in, like, back at struggling with our mind. And we think, oh, my next vacation 6 months from now, I better go back to that hilltop again with the same friends to experience that. So what if that potential of that sense of freedom were here already within you, and you could access it intentionally at any time? Once you learn basically how to kind of operate your own consciousness. And in some ways, that's what meditation is. It's a series of steps or practices to train the mind, or really maybe untrain the mind, unlearn as much as learn, so that we can return home to a sense of freedom and true nature. So this problem solver, so on the level of, we often mistake this suffering and sense of self we're trying to get rid of as if we need to accept everything, we shouldn't be so desirous, we have to stop doing these things on a personality level. Whereas on a personality level, on a physical level, we need on some level to, like, say, let's say we're hungry, so we feel pain, then we desire food, then we seek it, then we grasp it. So we're doing all the things we're not supposed to do. We own it to ourselves. It's my food. I'm going to eat it. Then we take it and ingest it, and then we feel relieved of suffering. So that pattern on the physical level and on some level of personality is not the problem of suffering that we're talking about. That's a relative level stuff that we have to deal with on a relative level. What I'm talking about is this secondary mini-me, this illusory sense of self that is co-opting and trying to solve a problem that it doesn't even have. And when it doesn't have a problem, it says, oh my God, that's a problem. There's definitely got to be a problem because I must be in danger. If there's no problem, then it's a setup. And it piggybacks on other physical issues and regular problems in the world. So as we start this, just to be clear, because some people, when I do this little exercise, there's definitely issues and problems and things that need to be dealt with on a relative level. That's not what I'm talking about, right? Does that make sense? There's things, that once you realize that that's natural, you have to get food, you have to grasp it, you have to own it, you have to, that those things can be taken, that can be dealt with in ordinary ways with other skills of being human. So this problem solver, when it, on the level of identity, when that relaxes, let's see what's here, okay? So we'll do this little inquiry that's very simple, and then I want to hear like little reports of one word or sentence or two from you. So it's very simple. This is a very simple way of checking this out. So with your eyes open, you just want to take your awareness and look to see what's here. So here's the inquiry that I want you to ask yourself. What's here now when there's no problem to solve? So just ask that with your mind and then look. Let go of the problem solver. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do here and now. What's here? Who's here? What's this like? when there's no problem to solve just now. So don't look to thought and don't go to sleep. No need to reference the past or anticipate the future. Just now, who's here? What's this? When there's no problem, what shows up? What's absent? And what's the qualities of presence that open up? So what would you say? Anyone just say a quality or a...
Steadiness.
Openness.
Receiving.
Connection.
Peace.
Spacious. Yeah.
Being.
Listening.
Hearing.
Curious. Yeah. So that's a quality of intelligence, that curiousness of the heart. What else?
Butterflies.
What is it?
Butterflies.
Inside. So some kind of the movement of aliveness, or more like, uh-oh, where's my orientation? I'm disoriented from my usual way. Like, what's happening? Like butterflies like that, or just aliveness?
The second one.
Yeah. So just see if awareness can kind of accept those, just love those, be with those. So what else? Anyone else notice anything?
Relief.
Yeah, so the transition is relief, that we don't even know that mini me is striving, going, and it goes, huh. Wow. And then the absence of striving, right? Is there anything needed right now to make you happy? Anything that needs to be pushed away? Just now? In terms of who you are? So instead, all the qualities that we've been seeking, connection, peace, receptivity, joy, security. Anyone feel that? Okayness, well-being, quality? It's a little deeper than the first. First there's relief, then there's absence, then there's kind of space, then there's kind of a receiving, peace, joy, safety, security, or okayness, well-being, curiosity. That's the quality of the new operating system, the heart-mind. What else? Anyone else want to say?
Belonging.
Yeah, so that's the connection part, right? So it's interesting. Spaciousness and connection, right? Peace and joy. Steadiness and yet emptiness. What else?
Presence.
So some kind of presence. Being is another word like that, right? Being. Feel your being. So instead of the doer or the ego-centered striver, you immediately can access that which obviously must have been here because it was that far, it took that long. So this is kind of the kind of inquiry or a pointer that shows like, wow, I've been looking for that outside, those qualities. I've been trying to do something to get it. What if it's already here? And it's just a matter of a little movement of consciousness, some dropping, opening, but then knowing. So then now, once you open, it's can you feel that this is you? Meaning, so recognition is the first part. You recognize this, the relief, the absence, the... Now the realization is this inquiry to ask yourself, to feel, is this an experience that you're having, what you're just describing, or is this who you are? Have you actually discovered the ground of your being which feels this way, to which now thoughts, feelings, and experiences are arising? You feel the, you can kind of play with that. Like this sense of being or steadiness, spaciousness, receptivity, is that the feeling of being? And then see from here, now notice that thoughts, feelings, choices are arising. Can you feel that from here? Do you notice how it's kind of easier to see, oh, I could say this. Oh, I'm thinking that. Thoughts kind of move. There's the potential to say something if you needed to, but you don't have to. Yeah? What's that like? What if this were the kind of the ground that was so close? So ask yourself this. I wonder what the next thought will be. And just be curious. Rest as that curious awareness. Wonder what the next thought will arise. Wonder what it'll be. And what do you notice? What is it? There isn't one. There isn't one, and yet there's some awareness. So I wonder what the space is like in which thoughts are arising or could arise. I wonder what the space is like that thoughts move through. So just be curious about that. Do you notice that? Just feel into that. And now notice, I wonder what is aware of space and thoughts. So kind of rest back or turn your awareness back to notice that which is aware already. What's this awareness like that's aware of thoughts and space and awareness? What's that feel like? Very subtle, right? Anyone notice that? It's a seer, yes. There's a seeing, right, from being. It's like bigger than you and yet not other than you. It's a new dimension, it's another dimension of basic human consciousness. So the potential for us to access this, and when we do, often people report that this is kind of where they get to at the end of a 10-day retreat or something like that. I don't know if people have gone on longer retreats. Kind of calms your mind and you become aware of the awareness or the ground of being that you are. So this is a way that you can, you know, do your usual, you know, usual sitting practice, and often the type of practices that I point to are called small glimpses many times during the day. So while you're sitting on a break at work, while you're on a bus or a subway or walking even, with your eyes open, you retune or you return home, and then you start to move from there, do an email from there, relate from here. And what happens then is, once you've discovered this way to return to who you are, and you have this awareness-based awake nature that you start to become more familiar with, it becomes more embodied, more joyous, loving, and then you're kind of rewiring it to live from there by walking and talking and writing and moving and working. And then while you do that, you lose it and you go back to your usual way of operating. And then, no big surprise, you just re-recognize during the day. And then you train to remain, and you let go, and you lose it, no big surprise, just return. Live from there as long as it naturally, spontaneously happens. Then start to notice the difference. Oh, wow, look at that. I just did that from my old way, system one, and now from system two, I'm like in the flow. Right, and a lot of what this like is what people describe when they're in the flow, like athletes or musicians who get in the flow. Have you heard about the flow state? So it's a way of operating with your eyes open at a high level, where the people who are in this flow are described that their ego is not there. They feel connected to everyone else around them. They feel highly functional. The time kind of slows down. They're in the now. And so this is kind of the possibility, or kind of a way that people have tapped into this way of living that we've kind of studied already. And then there's a way to do this, to shift into this, but you don't have to become an expert in that kind of field. So usually what they say is somebody who's done 10,000 hours will go into a flow state. 10,000 hours of violin, 10,000 hours of playing point guard on a basketball team, 10,000 hours of even people who knit for 10,000 hours go into a flow state. 10,000 hours of doing a certain task. So what I figure is, we've done 10,000 hours of walking, language, talking, reading, relating to other people. So we're already up to speed in terms of the things we can shift into this nature and live in kind of a awake flow state in the midst of the world. Because the awakening is really about not just what you do on the cushion, but really how you live your life. It's about changing your way of being and seeing and feeling that sense of connection, spaciousness, groundedness in the midst of your day as you're going about your day. So, question? Yes. Here comes a microphone. Maybe you'll help people hear.
Pardon me? Oh, okay. So the sensation that I had was, I guess, natal, you know, like just natal? Like
natal,
like
early?
Like early.
Newborn?
You know, like just, imagining as a newborn, essentially, just being one. There wasn't. I don't know. It was just a very pleasant glimpse, or maybe even regression, to this sensation of just being.
Just being. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. It's interesting because in some ways, this pointer and people can experience different qualities. Like sometimes you'll experience, like one person will say emptiness, and then the next person will say fullness, and then the next person will say, oh yeah, both of those. And so in some ways you experience something kind of prior to thought, something primal or primeval or primordial, and then yet it's something that's trans-conceptual called wisdom. You also are really going beyond thought to the higher level of using thought as needed, and so you're in wisdom mind. So some people say, like, well, I feel like I could, you know, respond. I feel like a Tai Chi master. I could respond to anything that needed to be done, but I don't have to. I feel like I'm relaxed and free of any pressure to be right or wrong or anything. So it's kind of both those, that quality of relaxation, you know, because you're relaxing. Sometimes I say you relax deeper than sleep to find that which is wide awake. So you're going like back to find the face before you were born, and then that's really who you are now. You know, you're the awake being that has basically the potential for the next stage of human development. So in some ways you talk about it as kind of feeling the natal, but what I talk about, and having worked with a lot of people, is that awakening seems to be the next natural stage of human development. And what I mean by that is that from the ego identity, you can't really live a fully intimate life. You can't bear sensitivity. You can't have your emotions and feel them fully, because the one they're appearing to is too small and too limited and made out of thought. So when you start to have any kind of emotion, let alone, you know, and even a normal grieving process of full emotion, from that you can only get so far in life without waking up. When you wake up, what you're waking up to is a new sense of being, a sense of spaciousness, a sense of interconnectedness, a way of tolerating and embracing and loving and feeling like emotions come through, and kind of like, sometimes I call it shake and bake, you know, they kind of shake through you, but you feel a fullness. You know, the famous Zen saying is, you know, what is awakening like for a Zen master? You know, when I'm happy, I laugh. When I'm sad, I cry. So it's allowing a full human intimacy. Aliveness you have to shift basically from head to spaciousness to heart, to open-hearted awareness, which has both heart, mind, and spaciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So just see what it's like even now if you just try this other little pointer, which is if we feel like our consciousness is located in our head, in our mind, what happens if you just allow awareness that's identified or attached to thought just to step out and just feel your jaw directly from within? And so awareness is knowing your throat directly from within your throat, and then your awareness is dropping and knowing the center of your chest, the kind of heart space, aliveness and awareness, directly from within. So you're not looking up to thought, you're not looking down from thought. Intelligence, awareness has actually unhooked and dropped from head to heart. And what do you notice when you're located? Where's your conscious? What's your consciousness like? What's your view from here? Anyone notice anything? Warmth, yeah. On a number of levels, physical and, yeah. Anyone else notice anything? Vibration in that area, yeah. Comforting. Lightheadedness, yeah, the head is light in a number of ways, could be, yeah. Embraced, yes, embraced, yeah. Yes?
Yeah, I'm kind of down right now, so I noticed my heart
hurts. Yeah, so you kind of go to your emotional heart, yeah, and feel that, yeah. And in some ways, it's almost like the heart we're talking about is the heart, sometimes people feel below it, that can embrace the emotional heart. So when we talk about heart-mind, often the emotional heart, it's not the emotional heart, it's not the physical heart, and it's not even the heart chakra. It's actually kind of like a space or an area that touches the emotional heart, it touches the physical heart, it touches the heart chakra, but it's more like a feels like the center of intelligence or a door that opens up behind and in front. And can speak and without going up to the screen of the mind to analyze everything. And yet has, just like a flow state, it has complete access to all information. So let's try one more here, which is, this one's kind of called returning the eyes to their natural state. So if you realize that we often treat our eyes as if they're like our hands. We go out to objects, yeah? We almost feel like, let me look at that, let me look at that. Right, look at that, and we pinpoint things, and it keeps us in kind of our fear-based reptilian brain. So what we're going to do is open up our eyes, and the first pointer is that actually the way our eyes work is not like our hands. We know how our ears work, which is that sound comes from outside, vibrates, comes to our ears, and hearing is receiving, right? So seeing is the same as hearing. Light reflects off of objects and comes to your eyes. So just feel what that's like. So you're not going out to see. Light reflects off of objects and comes to your eyes the way sound comes to your ears. Seeing is receiving, so you can rest back and you're not any less safe by not going out because light is traveling at the speed of light. So you're safe and receptive. Yeah? You feel that? And then just a way to kind of open this space of this little mini-me and giving you a sense of spacious embodiedness, we'll just work with a way of opening to a panoramic awareness by gently opening your peripheral vision and letting awareness go all the way around behind you. So when you open your peripheral vision, you're actually not moving your eyes at all. Your eyes are already seeing here, but we're just, our brain and our eyes are focused in one place. And that keeps us in kind of a mode of being caught. So just see what it's like if you look straight ahead or look a little up. And then what you're doing is just gently open your peripheral vision. And maybe smile and breathe. Just take your time. Just opening your peripheral vision. to the side so that awareness starts to move, and awareness can at some point unhook or let go of seeing, and awareness can move to be aware of the space in which sound is coming and going, and then awareness can open and become aware of the space in which sound is coming and going behind you. So there's kind of an open panoramic view, and then from this view, feel like you can open almost to the walls, and then feel as if you're aware from this spaciousness that comes back and is spacious and pervasive, is within your body as well. So you've kind of dropped again from head to heart, open to space. Space is aware from outside back to include and see the movement of sensation, thought, feeling from within your body. And just notice again, these pointers are about seeing what the natural state is when this little mini-me relaxes. So that's the main. The others are kind of returning you to your natural state by relaxing this separate sense of self. So what do you notice when this, you return to a more natural, open, embodied heart space view? Anybody notice? What is it?
Tension-free.
Yeah. Tension-free from tension of striving and... Yeah. Anybody else?
Floaty.
Floaty? Yeah. So floaty is out, and then see what if that floaty, if it, you feel it equally, the space equally within your body. And what do you notice then? Being dissolved in water. Yeah, kind of a flow. Yeah, the dissolving of the separate sense of self and just being, which is more spacious and flowing. And yet there's a groundedness to it too that you can feel. Flow and a ground. Yeah.
It makes things feel pretty simple.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. That's kind of about all it is. It's like, it seems like a couple different things we're doing. It's not about those things. It's returning you to your simple nature, which is flowing and non-striving, natural. Yeah. Anybody else notice who they are at this point? Who's here? Who am I? What's aware? What's the quality of being?
Pretty happy.
Yeah. Just pretty happy. Yeah. Just like, yeah, just happy. No big deal, right? Yeah. Free of suffering. Yeah, that's really the bottom line, is this is about free of a certain kind of suffering that kind of only meditation addresses, is a certain kind of suffering, which is the perpetual suffering that is generated by this patterning. When the patterning relaxes, we just have life on life's terms, just show up, stuff happens, nothing. It's not about, the fireworks and the, angels singing, it's just like just pretty happy. Baseline happy. That's the shift. Okayness, well-being, peace, joy. That's the natural condition when we awaken from this pattern. In any moment, and often you can see it sustains itself somewhat for a period of time, and then you can learn to return, and that's much of what is possible. Anyone else? So any comments, questions, reports? Yes. Here comes one.
If I heard you correctly, I think you used the term separate self-sense.
Yes.
For the little me.
Yeah.
Right. So when we're letting go of that.
Yes.
If I'm understanding, are we moving into another self that isn't quite so localized and quite so in control? Or trying to be in control, because it seems like when we're pure awareness,
right,
there is still some sense of self, but it's not. But it's connected to everything. It's not that separate self sense. Would that be true?
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, you can follow it kind of by steps and stages, or you can kind of skip. You know, you can break it down into, so you can be aware from the separate self-sense, and then you can go into pure awareness. Then pure awareness can be the observing self. And then there's still a sense of a self. Then as you feel embodied and open-hearted, there is a sense that there's no location of the managing entity of self. And yet, there's even more of a sense of like, oh, I'm a human being. My name is Locke. So it's funny. It's like you're not, at first it seems like there's two things. There's like, we're so identified with a separate sense of self, we're making it feel like, or the ego defenses are making it feel like, well, if I leave this, I have to leave everything and I'm not a human being. So I leave and I go to pure awareness, and it's like the defenses are going, danger, danger. You know, come back, and then you pop back, and then you go meditate, and you pop back. So the idea is we're moving to this awareness, then the awareness is the ground of being, and then the ordinary human being is very much part of this human being life. The being is the meeting place of the awareness, then the being is the identity, and the human is the expression. And who you are and your personality, your sense of humor, it's all, you know, that's fine. That's another dimension of, you know, what's going on. But it's very important. You're not leaving or dissociating or it's not about transcendence. It's about living a fully awake human life. So it's that mixing of the two that is the movement. Thank you. That's a great question. Yeah. Anyone else? Questions, comments, curiosities? Yes? Yes. Yes. Yeah. 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 I mean, the thing is, there's yes. So the thank you. Yeah. So the question is, how does this relate to the fight flight response when she's with her husband and her family? It seems okay, and then another situation. There's some triggering of a fight flight response. So on the biological level, there's some way that we have to deal with fight or flight when it's really fight or flight. Some of times it's needed, like if you're walking in the city and the car comes close and you have to jump back. You need the fight or flight response as a normal level. And then sometimes it gets triggered by psychological trauma issues, and then those have to be dealt with somewhat, you know, on that level. But then what I'm talking about is there's a piggybacking of the mini-me, the perpetually dissatisfied sense of self that's interpreting many, many more things that are threatening, as if it's threatening to you, but it's threatening to that little mini-me, and that sense of self is sending adrenaline and cortisol into your body and scaring your body as if there's a real threat, and there's no real threat. So when that, you're liberated from that, you're not operating from that at any time, there's a whole gamut of fight or flight triggers that are gone. And when others arise, they can be worked with or noticed or comforted, or you can use other skills to work with them on your other psychological level. So it's really about this freedom from this almost perpetual fear and perpetual dissatisfaction of wanting, feeling like I'm not enough. I've got to get something. If only this would work out. Then it goes into the personality story. Then when I get this and do that, or get that job, or this person and does this, and then I'll be okay. And it's really not even you, the person, who has enough food, clothing, and shelter. And it's this little secondary story of the self that when that relaxes, the ultimately where this goes is you feel like who you are is okay. That where this goes fairly quickly is you feel shame-free. Free of a sense that there's something wrong, that you're worthless, stupid, bad. You feel like on that level, you feel safety. I'm really okay. I'm really okay. Like the deepest level of existential personality identity is okay. There's nothing wrong with me. That's where this, because the other system is always feeding that and saying there's something, you didn't do that, you didn't get that, you're dissatisfied, it must be because of this, and it takes early childhood stuff. So when that goes, you go deeper than the personality level to the sense of being, well-being, okayness. And from there, then everything else, you can show up and grow up. You know, deal with stuff in your life. But that's the feeling that essentially when you get that, so it's not even a matter of like fully stabilizing this open-hearted awareness so you're continually 24/7 in this state without having any ego identification. It's really getting, first of all, the deep sense that doesn't go away, that you're okay, that there's not a threat to you being no good. It's really almost like, it isn't about death, it's almost more about hell. It's like, it's not like I'm going to die. It's like, I'm not in hell. I'm not going to hell. You know, there's no hell. I'm okay. Yeah, does that make sense? People have a sense of that? That's the direction, that's where the meeting of the awareness and the humanness comes. That's where this identity, focusing on this relaxing identity and discovering your natural ground comes to. So thank you all so much. It's great to be here with you. Hope to see you all again.